Good morning. This is Tim Harris with the Harris Real Estate University, and today is, of course, Friday. So like every Friday here at the Harris Real Estate University, we provide our superstar interview. Now, on some Friday superstar interviews, it'll be Julie and I presenting information to you, and on other Fridays, we feature a guest. Now, today's guest is somebody that I know all of you are going to want to hear directly from. He was very generous and is being very generous with his time, Mr. Kerry Sternberg, to spend the time with us today to answer all the questions that you guys have about what it actually takes to work with an asset management company. Now, I'm gonna foreshadow this call a tad. Don't be surprised if what you hear him say is identical to what all of you hopefully are hearing in your Agent REO Secrets class. Hopefully all of you are not going to hear any information that's too new, but I think having Kerry on the call will do nothing other than reinforce what we've been trying to get you guys to understand about what the asset management companies are looking for in listing agents. Now, let me give, you know, actually, Kerry, if you don't mind, could you just give a little summary of your bio? I've got actually a bunch of information I found when I was searching on the net last night, and I don't know what the high points are that you'd want to pick from, but I could probably, you've got a very long and illustrious work history, and I think I could probably take up a good 15 minutes hitting all the high points, so if you would.
Certainly, Tim. Thank you. Actually, I am an SOB, which is a stupid old broker. I've been doing this for almost 40 years, and I started as a licensed real estate agent and broker way back when. The highlights that I think will probably be most interesting to the listeners today, I got into the corporate REO world with then Ocwen Federal Bank, which is now Ocwen Financial, out of Florida. And I worked with them for a number of years before going to IndyMac Bank, which is now One West. I guess in this business you have to keep moving and keep changing your name in order to protect the innocent. I built the REO department at One West and expanded it, and we opened up the center in Austin, Texas, where it is now. And most recently, I was with American Home Mortgage Servicing in Irving, Coppell, Texas, where over the course of a year, we went from about 16,000, well, actually from about 4,000 assets when we then acquired Option One, and then later on in the year acquired the AmeriQuest portfolio from City Residential, and at the apex, we had close to 34,000 assets across the country, and I was managing over 200 full-time employees. And then I was recruited by Titanium Solutions Titanium Holdings, which is the parent company, to open up an REO department for them. That company is Excellin REO, and we are in the process of putting our platform together and getting ready, we hope, within the next 4 to 6 weeks to start taking on the first portfolios. And we can go on from there, Tim.
Yes, and we will. So as I promised, guys, this interview is going to be very, very important for you to take notes. A lot of you don't have access to somebody like Kerry to ask questions. So if you have any questions, I want you to go ahead and enter them into the webinar. And Kerry, I'm sorry, I didn't know you were an SOB. Julie, actually, is an old SOB, too.
Yeah, well, you know, there are a few of us around. When you consider that there is an 85%, I guess you could say, leakage ratio in the real estate business over a five-year period, meaning that out of everybody that's in business today, 5 years from now, only 15% will still be in business in the real estate business. It's quite an accomplishment to get through 25 years.
Well, I'm going to tail in on something on that. Julie was just telling me yesterday how we have noticed, and I'm sure you have noticed too, and guys, I'm going to get to all your tough questions. I see a lot of you are keying them in. Go ahead and enter your questions in. But Julie and I have noticed that the agents in the business, really probably starting about 90 days ago, because we offer something, Carrie, called free coaching calls where agents can, you know, even if they're not students, they can request free coaching calls, and all of our coaches set aside time every day to answer those questions and give those agents that service. And we've noticed that there is a significant difference in the questions that we're getting now versus the ones we are getting, you know, 2-3 years ago. The agents now seem, there's lots of new agents getting into the business and lots of agents that seem to be coming from, I'm going to say it's more professional backgrounds, more education. And I think that all the chaff has been squozed out of the market. I think we're going to see that a lot of the agents that are still standing, the 15%, because I've heard that number before, they're really, really strong. You know, so hopefully a lot of those agents will become listing agents for you. So let's get to the first question. This is kind of a fun question. You and I talked about it yesterday, and I liked your answer. So is there – well, let me set it up a snip. So a lot of people are now passing along, and I've heard actually Jim Cramer on CNBC say this, and a lot of other people are starting to attach onto it, that there is no shadow inventory, that's a myth, right? And I've heard other people, I've read that on the internet, that there is no shadow inventory, there's no bank overhang, blah, blah, blah. Is the shadow inventory a myth, Carrie?
Well, we need to define what we're talking about when we're talking about shadow inventory. If we talk about REO property that's already been foreclosed, the answer to the question is no. There is no shadow inventory of REO property. I can pretty well tell you that everything that's that has been foreclosed and is now owned by a bank or servicer or investor, they've got that property on the market in one shape or form. Now, the other question is, what really is shadow inventory? And to my way of thinking, the shadow inventory is really the loans that are in the foreclosure pipeline that will, in all likelihood, become REO property. And that's what I consider to be shadow inventory, and the answer is yes. Anywhere from 2.4 to 7 million assets are somewhere in the default pipeline and are being held up either by moratorium or by a government program or by servicers who are trying to figure out if there's any way to mod or adjust the loan so that the people can stay in their homes. So my answer to that question is, yes, there is a huge shadow inventory, and it's sitting in the foreclosure pipeline right now.
Well, then you add to that, when you hear the government, well, Elizabeth Warren from the Congressional Oversight Committee for TARP, she's on record, and I posted this video on our blog, timandjulieharris.com, last year, where she's on record saying it's 13 to 15 million. And when she says that number, guys, she's saying that number anticipating that a lot of the adjustable rate mortgages are going to go boom as well, because those guys aren't going to be able to refi because the houses are upside down. So when you hear the shadow inventory, it's exactly what Carrie said. In addition to that, it's all the other mortgages that they project will essentially be on their way to foreclosure if they don't sell them short first. That's really where that big number comes from. Carrie, have you heard anything more about what they're projecting in terms of the number of these adjustable rate mortgages? I guess we're starting to see the peak of that this year, of the resets starting like in the summer. Do you know anything about that?
I can't quote any figures at this point. Again, it's said to be huge, but I anticipate there's probably going to be some type of government intervention now and then.
Yeah,
you know, that may, I'm not saying it's going to cure the problem by any means, but again, it may delay some of those things. What it won't do, we've got a property now that has been in the foreclosure pipeline for a long period of time. We've got product that has been either modified or in a trial modification, and the recidivism rate, which is the rate at which these modifications default, is still extremely high. So, even with the modifications, there are some folks out there that all they're doing with these are just buying time until they figure out what it is they're actually going to do.
Great question, or great answer. Thank you. So when do you think we'll start seeing the shadow inventory homes, the homes that we're speaking about and hearing about? When do you actually think that those will start hitting the market?
I think you'll start seeing the flow start by the end of Q1 of this year. I think you'll start seeing assignments coming in and start increasing through the second and third and probably fourth quarter of this year. And, depending on the market and where it is, in my opinion, it is very likely that we're going to see another round of price decreases because of the inventory that is coming back on the market.
Well, so that's a really great point. When you say another round of price decreases, you're suggesting that the sheer volume of REOs coming for sale. Remember who we're talking with here, guys. He's the president of what's going to be an immense asset management company with a huge background. So you have to assume that he's talking with other asset manager owners, presidents, CEOs, and so forth. And what you just heard him say was that he's anticipating there to be more that home value depreciation. Now, we got to be, we have to throw a disclaimer. It doesn't necessarily apply to every real estate market in every state across the country. There'll certainly be some areas of the country that aren't affected. But just the fact that all these REOs will be hitting the market, it only makes sense that the added supply is going to reduce the value of other properties and there'll be more depreciation. Do you have a suggestion on what we might anticipate as far as further depreciation?
I don't think we're going to see the type of drastic drop that we've seen in the last couple of years. I think that prices have adjusted, shall we say, when you're looking at 50% reductions, properties that were $800,000 that are now worth $400,000. I think that we're not going to see that type of 50% reductions. But in some areas where there is a large backlog of property, you very well may see 15, 20, 25, and 30% additional decreases in value, again, depending on the number of properties that come open. I think the markets that you could predict are the same ones that were hit the hardest initially, Florida, Nevada, Arizona, of course, California. I would expect that those are going to be the same areas that have problems. And even though some of those areas have started to rebound a little bit because the inventory has been shrinking, once that inventory burgeons out again, I think you'll see just the opposite effect, and it's going to go back in the other direction.
Well, there's been a lot of talk that the next waves of homes coming for sale are going to be more expensive homes. As some of these option arms reset, as some people bail on their houses before the option arms reset, do you have any opinions on that?
Very quickly, I agree. I think we're going to see the average price of the REO property increase, and we're going to see a whole lot more property that is in the what you would call the executive level than we have before. And again, particularly some of the folks that may be on the call that are in California, a $500,000 house, is not an executive level house in your area, but in most areas of the country, particularly on the East Coast and in the Rust Belt, $500,000 today is a mansion.
That's right.
So it's all relative as to where you are. Right before I left American Home, I had a property in California that was the loan amount, the unpaid principal balance of the loan was over $8 million. And the value that we had put the property on the market for initially was 4.4, and before I left, it was reduced down to 3.9, and we still had no takers.
That's right. So I mean, that's certainly going to happen. That makes total sense. It's in alignment with what we've been sharing with the students really for the past 2 years. So some of you have asked questions in the webinar, and I'm sorry I didn't mention this. The red button that's on there, that the button that allows 25 of you to enroll in Agent REO Secrets, if you guys want to become students of our coaching program, I'm not going to be talking about a lot on this call because this is obviously a superstar interview, but go ahead and press that button and you can enroll in Agent REO Secrets. So go ahead and hit that red button at any time. Only 25 of you are going to be allowed to enroll today on this call. And we are going to be doing a new student call next Thursday. That's where I interview two or three of our existing students who are doing really well with BPOs and with REOs. So just a reminder to let all of you know on this call that we will be doing another call next Thursday that is obviously going to give you more information on how to become an REO listing agent. And for those of you who have assets already, it'll help you get your REO business to the next level. All right, so here's an interesting question. I mean, this is something I wrote down. You've kind of touched on it a couple times, but we get this question all the time, and it'd be great to kind of get you on the record about this one. Yesterday, Rick Sharga from Realty Track came out and said basically we're right in the middle of the second wave, and this is sort of a third wave, three massive waves of foreclosures, right? And so he thinks we're basically in the middle of the second wave. I think from what you just said, you did too. So where do you agree with that we're in the middle of the second wave, and are you anticipating a third wave, and is that third wave, how's it going to compare in size in terms of sheer numbers to the first, say, two waves, using Rick's analogy?
It's an interesting question. As we talked yesterday, I believe that we are not going to see the market stabilize to a point where the majority of property that's on the market is owned by individual owners, owner occupants. I think we're 5 to 7 years away from that point. So whether it's one more wave or two more waves or whether it's a steady flow, we've got a tremendous amount of bank-owned inventory that's going to have to be converted somehow, out of the market before the individual owners like you and I are going to be able to put our property on the market and get the type of value that, we traditionally have looked for as a homeowner, as I'm sure everybody on the call, realizes, and that is that for most of us that own homes, it's the single largest investment that we're going to ever make, and most of us don't want to give away equity that we feel that we have built up. So I think we're 5 to 7 years away from seeing the end of this.
Right. The end of the depreciation cycle, or are you saying 5 to 7 years just for us to finish the sifting and sorting of the market? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes. I'm saying I think it's going to be 5 to 7 years before the market normalizes.
Normal. Got it. I understand.
Keep in mind that even in the best of times, there is always REO property.
Right.
But the percentage of REO property versus the percentage of privately owned property has totally flip-flopped and will probably be another 5 to 7 years before it normalizes.
And to the point where homes reappreciate to what people might have purchased them for, let's say in 2007, early 2008, any projections on that?
No. I wish I had a crystal ball for that, but we're definitely in for the long haul, so we're probably talking probably talking about a 10-year time frame before the people that bought at the top of the market are going to be able to see their houses get back to the price at which they paid for them.
Do you think that massive drag as far as the number of people upside down, do you think that's going to cause more people making a decision with no financial duress to walk away from their homes?
My personal opinion is yes. I think that there are going to be people out there that look and say, I made this investment. I wanted a place for my family to live, but I also looked at this as being an important investment for my family. And I bought the property, and it was worth $600,000, and I owe $500,000 on it. And today, it's worth $3.25 million, and it's going to take me 10, 12 years to just get back to break even. I don't think that's a smart economic decision for my family and for my financial future, so I think I'm just going to go ahead and walk away.
We're certainly seeing and reading a lot about that. I mean, there's been, since really when this started coming unraveled in 2007, it was on the fringe. You'd read about it in the occasional blog. People were basically suggesting that, you know, that we were going to be in this cycle for a long time, your house would be upside down, and you're just blah, blah, blah. I mean, a lot of the students are well aware of what's going on in the markets because they get calls every day from homeowners who want to short sale their homes with no financial need. They just don't want to get stuck with their own toxic asset, as it were. And now that thought is making its way into the mainstream media. I mean, Carrie and I talked about yesterday, New York Times did a little blurb about it. There was a professor who wrote a big white paper about this, I think, out of Arizona. So we're going to start seeing a lot of national discussion on the subject of should someone keep an upside-down home. If that catches wind, if people, if normal people with no financial issues start thinking about walking away from their upside-down home, that's going to put us in God knows how long this will last then. I mean, if that starts happening, if we start seeing more foreclosures, I mean, obviously we're seeing a lot of foreclosures because of the unemployment rate, but if we start seeing foreclosures because of that, because of people's mindsets about paying their mortgage, that's going to be a completely different can of worms that I don't think anyone can really anticipate. So let's get into the tough questions. Are you ready for some tough questions? Great job answering those questions, by the way. I'm glad you didn't take a pass. Oh, by the way, on this call, Carrie, you get 3 passes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I don't think you're going to take any because you're not afraid to answer anything. I ask those same questions of other folks we've interviewed, and they sort of hem and haw, and they sound like they're giving us a political answer, but you're not going to do that. I appreciate that. So let's just jump in. Now, I've got 60 questions from the agents on the calls, and they're all obviously about how they can go about securing assets. So Carrie has answered your questions about what has been and what will be. So let's talk about what you can do today to become an REO listing agent. So, Carrie, what are the 3 to 5, you can pick 2 if you only want to, most important things you look for when hiring your REO asset, your REO listing agents or listing brokers?
The things that we're looking at, not only in the hiring, but in the retention of our REO brokers, probably the number one thing that we look for is an agent who can communicate well. And by that, I don't mean someone who speaks well. I mean someone who responds to our queries extremely quickly and gives us the response that we need, and does it on a personal and professional level. The one thing that will kill an agent with us quicker than anything else is for one of my asset managers to call them and ask a question about an asset that is under their care and have them tell us, well, let me check with my assistant and I'll get right back to you.
I wrote that question down because I knew you wanted to mention that. So, guys, I'm going to ask them the specific questions. You know, it's so funny, Carrie, that you bring this up because so many agents come to the university as new students wanting to learn how to do BPOs and REOs. And their first question, usually their third question is, do I have to have a team? And because a lot of them see that having a team is something that they perceive that asset management companies, like the one that you run, that you guys somehow prefer agents with teams. And kind of the vibe I'm getting from you is the complete opposite. Is that true?
Yes, it is. And I'm not saying that I don't believe in the team concept. However, I am a very picky owner, and that's how you have to look at me, agents. You have to look at me like an individual owner, just like you would if you went out knocking on doors trying to get a listing. I want to feel like I am your most important client. Now, am I really? I don't know. You may have other clients that where you have more assets than you have of mine. But when I talk to you and when my asset managers talk to you, we want to feel like there is no company, there is no asset more important than ours. And that's tough to do if you farm everything off to team members.
Well, you mentioned yesterday, Carrie, that you know that there's a lot of agents that have accumulated so many assets that they don't even see the actual assets the bank assigned to them. So you hire a listing agent to get your assets sold, and then you just essentially find out that listing agent is on the golf course all day and delegating it to people that you don't know whether or not they're actually doing the job on your properties. And obviously, guys, think he put it in perfect context. If he was your most important seller, right? So back in the bubble market, you just listed a wonderful, you know, $5 million house. There's people standing in line, and the seller's going to pay you 7% plus a $10,000 selling bonus. Plus, he might give you the Jaguar, right? So the point of it is you're going to treat that seller like gold. And what Carrie is saying is, yes, I'm an asset management company. Yes, I'm going to probably assign you lots and lots of assets. You better not take my relationship for granted, because every single day on every single transaction, we are judging you. We are valuing you just like that seller would. Right? Did I summarize it, I think, hopefully for you?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I do want to make one comment about what you said, and I know that you said it in jest, but I'm not intimating that superstar brokers who have big teams spend their time out on the golf course. I know that they don't. But they spend their time trying to get in front of people that can give them additional business. They don't spend their time doing, in most cases, and you'll excuse the expression, but the grunt work. I want the agent that's going to get his hands dirty, because I need to know that the agent whose name is on my listing knows my listing backwards and forwards. So what I would say to the superstar agent that says, well, I can't do that. I've got to spend my time doing other things that will bring in the more business. I would say to that person, look, then you don't want to be my agent of record. You need to get one of your team members who is going to devote their time to my assets to sign up and be my asset broker, because you're not going to have the time to do it.
Well, an agent that had a good team where basically they were able to delegate virtually everything other than managing their assets, other than knowing the inventory, an agent could delegate virtually everything else except knowing the property, except being hands-on getting the listing sold, well, that's the way that Carrie is suggesting he wants to see those of you with assistants prioritizing your time. He doesn't want to have what he perceives to be and what all of you should be perceiving to be, you know, the most important thing here, which is getting the home sold. He doesn't want to have that delegated to somebody that he doesn't feel comfortable with doing a great job. He's hiring you, and he wants to know that you're in the kitchen mixing the bowl, not someplace else. So, Carrie, you've been in this business for a long time. You've been working with agents for a long time. So if you can imagine, if you can remember back, or maybe someone just maybe their information is right there on your desk now, the perfect, the ideal, if you could clone this agent, this asset listing agent, What do they look like? How do they act? How do they behave? How do they interact with you? What do you, the perfect agent, if you could have 1,000 of them, describe them? You said communication. I got that.
Yep, that's very important. Market knowledge. If you tell me that you are working in zip code 90210, then I expect you to be an expert in that zip code. I laugh when I see agents who submit 30 and 40 zip codes as their market area, because I know that there's no way for them to be expert in all those other areas. So that's probably the number one criteria is market knowledge. A great REO agent is going to accept the assignment, and those of you who are already doing work for REO companies know that these generally come by a task or an email. The assignments are accepted in a matter of hours, not in a matter of days. Occupancy reports. An average agent is going to let me know whether or not my property is occupied inside the 48-hour timeline. A good agent is going to do it in the first 24 hours, and a great agent is going to let me know inside of 4 to 6 hours of notification whether or not that property is occupied.
And, Carrie, you're checking. You're keeping track. If you've got an agent that's letting you know virtually the same second you get the email, check on this property, is it occupied, right? You know which of those agents are. You know who they are in the marketplaces. And eventually, assuming they're doing well in the other categories, they're going to get more assignments naturally. Is this a correct statement?
Yes, and that's one of the benefits of having the technology that we have, because it permits us to hone in on, you know, on mathematical items to say, okay, the assignment went out at 9 a.m. on the 15th, and the agent responded at noon on the 15th. And the response time is calculated, and those types of things are easy to see.
What are the other categories? Is it days on the market? That's obviously something you guys pay attention to, correct?
Yes. Days on the market is important, but probably the other single most important item that I look at with a great asset manager is how close was their initial BPO to the ultimate sales price. That tells me whether or not that agent really knows what their market is.
List to sell price ratio, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, that doesn't always mean that, you know, that we're going to take the agent's word initially. But if the agent tells me it's worth 100 and the appraiser says it's worth 150, and the recon company says it's worth 135, and we listed it 135, and 3 months later it sells for 98,000. Well, you know what? The agent was right all along.
Right, recon company guys being reconditioning company. So that's an interesting question, real quick. You guys do send in third parties to recon your properties prior to the listing agents getting them?
Well, let's define a little bit, and I think what I mean by a recon is reconciliation. If I have a BPO that's 100 and an appraisal that's 150, then I'm going to send it to a reconciliation company.
Got it.
Who
Sorry.
Is going to look at both products and tell me what the true value is based on their analysis of the BPO and
sure.
of the appraisal. Now, the other question that you're asking, you know, what do we do with our properties? We do what our investors tell us to do, but more and more we are leaning towards repairing the properties so that they are in a lendable condition, because there are very few loan products that are available today, mostly the GSE products, and those products, in order to go forward, insist that the property be in a certain condition before they will loan on it. So we're trying to do that up front to make sure that the property is in a lendable condition, because our ultimate goal, our target market, is our end user, and we want them to be able to get a loan.
So you guys, there's that, what he's talking about is there's the GSEs, obviously, guys, Freddie and Fannie. So they have certain standards the property has to meet in order for the buyer to obtain a loan. And we saw this starting probably about a year and a half, well, more like a year ago, that the asset management companies were sending in Home Depot and Lowe's to go in there and recondition the property to meet those minimum standards. So that's what he's touching upon today. And really, whoever the investor is will determine what properties get reconditioned to that level versus which properties just basically get the traditional just trash out and that sort of thing. All right, so we have a ton of questions. Guys, I'm going to get to all the specific questions because I'm going to give Carrie an opportunity to talk about this in a second with regards to the HRCs. Those of you who are existing HRCs with titanium, obviously you have a lot of questions on how you can get in the front of the line to list assets. So we're going to get to those questions in a second. Carrie, are you going to be limiting the number of assets that a listing broker has?
The answer to that is yes. We're probably going to be limiting the number of assets to 20.
Okay.
Now, that's subject to change, but initially it will be about 20 assets.
All right. So this is a great question. I'm sorry if I'm not reading your names as I read your questions. We've got a lot of over 100 questions now. A lot of you are asking the exact same thing, so I apologize if I don't read your names. Julie, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, so I wanted to ask, this is one of the most popular questions from existing HRCs. When will your existing HRCs with titanium in good standing receive REOs? And also, you know, how are you prioritizing that if they're already doing a great job for you guys?
Okay, that's a great question, and let's see if we can answer that and some of the other ones. Within 2 weeks, all of the HRCs that are signed up with titanium will be getting a notification and asked to complete a questionnaire that will help us determine our initial cadre of REO brokers. So the first question that's on the questionnaire, is like we used to say when you're having trouble with your television set, is it plugged in? The first question is going to be, are you interested in receiving REO assignments? If you're not, then you don't have to fill out the rest of the questionnaire, and it will not impact your standing with Titanium Solutions at all. Now, assuming that most of you will answer yes to that question, then there's another series of questions regarding your current and past experience with REO property and handling the inventory. And we're going to use the answers to those questions, as well as the feedback from Titanium on the individual agents, in order to establish our initial group of brokers. Now, currently we have somewhere between 9 and 10,000 HRCs around the country. I anticipate, depending on market saturation, that we will initially have about 1,500 of those 9,000 who will be our first wave of REO brokers.
Okay, so that makes sense. Through the questionnaire process, that's how you're prioritizing. Is that how I'm understanding that?
Well, and based on their experience
and based
at Titanium,
on the feedback.
They are HRCs. So those of you who have been active HRCs for Titanium and doing a great job on all of your assignments, we speak to you guys every single day. What he's suggesting is that's certainly going to benefit you now as they go about selecting their REO agents.
That is correct. We want to make sure that everybody that works with Titanium looks at it as a value add proposition. If you do a good job in home retention, then you are given the opportunity to do loss mitigation and short sale, and then ultimately the opportunity to do REO. Our intention is to reward those people who have been loyal to the Titanium family and give them the opportunity to make additional money.
Makes sense. Okay, great. So there you go. Those are the questions a lot of you guys were asking that are existing HRCs. So Carrie, we better underline this point. You do not want them calling their Titanium reps, correct?
No.
Yes.
We appreciate your enthusiasm, but the Titanium reps are busy doing what they're supposed to be doing, and that's home retention work. They are not going to be people that give out REO assignments. So it's not going to do you any good to, to try to contact them and say, now, remember, Susie, I'm your favorite HRC, and I do all my work great, and I need for you to talk to that guy Sternberg and tell him what a great broker I am and everything else. So, please don't do that. It's not going to help you.
So let's jump back. Go ahead, Julie.
Okay, Tim, sorry to interrupt you guys. As Tim mentioned a little bit earlier in the call, if you hit that button on the webinar, you can sign up for our REO Secrets class. And this is where you find out more about information just like you're getting today from our great guest here with Carrie. So I wanted to give a quick welcome to Flora in Tallahassee. These are some of our brand new students in the REO class, and you will be getting a personalized phone call to get you ramped up immediately and get you going with the REO Secrets class. So Flora in Tallahassee, Paul in Denver, Jose in Santa Clarita, California, Barbara in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and Randall in Chino Hills, California as well. You guys can expect a call almost immediately after this call to get you going on REO Secrets, and that's not everybody. I didn't want to take up the whole call. I think we may have 6 or 7 spots left, Tim, so I'll let you know in a few minutes.
So, Carrie, once an agent has Excel and REO assets, right? So once an agent has those properties listed, they're going to be essentially evaluated, judged, whatever words you want to use, on an ongoing basis. And we talked about how an agent can go about becoming an REO agent or what you look for as far as the attributes. Now, how does an agent lose their assets? How does an agent, what would be the real red flags for you as the president of a company like this to know when it's time to fire an agent?
Very, very good question. The first thing, if my asset managers come to me and tell me that a real estate broker is not responding in a timely fashion, or they come to me and tell me that they've discovered that the asset or the broker whose name is on the listing is not the one who's actually working the property.
I see a reoccurring theme developing on this call with you with regards to that.
Yes. Gary,
is this your specific? Is this something you, because you've got such an expansive background, you are a broker, is this something that you're seeing other people in your position, they also hold the same ethos with regards to agents delegating their REO work, or is this a carry issue? I'm just curious.
Well, I think more people are adopting it. I'm not going to speak for anybody else, but I've been in this business a long time, and it used to be that there were very few REO properties. And so whatever agent you had, that you knew that agent was working those properties. Now, because the retail market has dried up, all of your superstar teams are now getting into the REO business. So, you'll get this beautiful package from, Johnny Appleseed, who is the number one agent in Apple Valley, Minnesota.
I think we're coaching him.
You very well may be. And he wants to introduce himself because he is an REO veteran. He's been doing this for almost 12 months now. And so we ought to be using him and his expansive team. More and more of these types of folks are having to get into the REO business because it's the only business in town. And so we found that I used to laugh when I would get calls from people inside my companies, even CEOs. I remember one time I got an email from Mike Perry, who was the chief executive officer at then IndyMac Bank, that said, Carrie, my barber's brother's wife is in the real estate business and is interested in helping us market our assets. And, of course, you know, Mike was the CEO of the company, so I got in touch with this lady who, you know, the only thing she knew about an REO is she drove past them sometimes. And, you know, that's not what we're looking for. So, yes, I'm sorry to keep harping on that, but it is a recurring theme with us that there's got to be communication, and there's got to be communication with the right person.
Well, so let's whittle down that word communicate just a little bit, because that's something we tell our agents, our students, communication is the key. That's going to always be what matters most in real estate, because we're in a communication business. We're in a business where your personal contact does matter. So what type of communication? When you're bringing on asset managers, you're going to have assets, from what I understand, virtually in all 50 states, and you guys are going to be eventually listing tens of thousands of assets. So when you say communicate, does each individual asset manager sort of have their own preferences and how they want their REO listing brokers communicating with them, or are you sort of setting the standard for Excellen as far as what you expect?
Generally going to set the standard for Excellen, and I'll tell you why. Because of the volume that we're going to be dealing with, it's very difficult for an asset manager to do his communication by telephone.
I need you to tell Rochelle.
So, from that standpoint, I know that that's going to be very disappointing to a lot of the listeners out there, because, you know, they like the person-to-person contact. But my asset managers are going to be handling up to 500 assets, and they just don't have the time in all cases to answer the phone calls. The reason for that, and I don't mean to sound critical. I am a real estate agent, a real estate broker, but the tendency when you get a client on the phone is to spend 10% of the time addressing the issue and the other 90% of the time trying to cultivate additional business.
You mean the agents do? The agents basically
Correct.
Are spending all their time trying to solicit for more listings and not enough time servicing what they have.
That's correct. And my folks just don't have the time to do that. So the majority of the communication is going to be done by email, or it's going to be done, on the basis that we will call or text your cell phone, and we will leave a message with what it is we want. And then we need for you to get back to us with that information as quickly as possible. Usually we'll say if we get you on the phone, or if we reach your answer machine or your cell phone, I'll say, hi, this is Carrie at Excellen REO. I need you to go to Main Street and tell me whether or not the back door has been jimmied open. Send me an email as soon as you're there. Well, it tells you what to do, when to do it, and how to communicate back with me.
So you guys are going to be taking communication from your asset managers to the next level. So one of the things we suggest, and this is a little secret, I think, and not really much of a secret, but just kind of common sense if you ask me, but one of the things we tell all of our REO listing students to do, our agents to do, is essentially establish a hotline, a separate phone number that only is given to your asset managers. You know, your spouse doesn't even have this phone number. This is a phone number that goes directly to the listing agent, and that phone gets answered, or if it's for some reason rolls to voicemail, that voicemail gets returned immediately. So for those of you who are out there who are big-time listing agents, and I know a lot of you are, listen to what he is saying. He's telling you repeatedly, in as many polite ways as he possibly can, that communication is one of the most important things. So create that hotline for yourself. Have your cell phone have two separate rings, two separate numbers assigned, and have the asset manager hotline, that's what a lot of our REO agents call it, have a separate ringtone. Answer the phone when it rings, because you guys have to think, you heard him say, each of his asset managers are going to have 500 properties to manage. And if there's an emergency on one of the properties, they don't want to wait around for you to check your voicemail for your assistant to forward you. They don't want to listen to your phone tree. They want to be able to get you immediately.
That's right. Tim, I'm sorry to jump in here. I just wanted to say welcome to Tamala in Shorewood, Illinois. She's one of our brand-new REO students. And, by the way, we're down to only three spots in that class. It is one of our most popular, almost always sold-out classes. So it was great of you to open that class up, Tim. Also, Paula in Rogers, Arkansas, Vicki in Montclair, California, and Teresa in Hollister, California. You will all get called shortly after this call from our customer service team to get you ramped up into the class. Back to you, Tim.
So you mentioned something earlier, and I'm scanning through the questions right now, and we have a ton of questions. I'm just trying to pull out some of the unique questions. You said experience a few times, and the fact is, Carrie, is in most parts of the country, the most experience that any particular agent could possibly have in this end of the industry is going to be maybe, as you said, about a year. So given the fact that REOs are still relatively new and most agents across the country didn't even have any experience with them prior, how much does experience really play into your decision as to who to hire?
Well, it does play a good deal. And the reason for that is that even though REO has not been anywhere close to the percentage it is now, it's been around for a long time. And there are agents out there that have REO experience. But we know in some markets, for example, in some California markets, there were not any REOs for the decade that preceded the last few years. So those folks that haven't been in the business a long time may not have that type of experience. And I'll just be very candid. If I've got two candidates in the same market area, one with some experience and one with not, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out which one I'm going to choose.
When you see an agent who has taken additional education, and I hope you answered this question the way I want you to. When you see an agent that's taken the time to have additional education, like it's got our REO designation or just taken classes, someone who's done more than just shown up on your website and filled out the application, does that weigh into your decision?
Yes, it does.
Okay,
that's
the perfect answer.
I'm a great believer in education. I used to own and operate a proprietary real estate school years and years ago.
Uh-huh.
I think it's very important. Some of the other things that we're going to look for, Tim, is, what type of REO organizations do you belong to? Do you belong to REOMAC? Do you belong to the NRBA? Do you belong to any other national or regional REO organizations? Because these are organizations that generally encourage and offer educational opportunities for their members. So people that have the time and energy and money to invest in themselves by becoming members of those organizations are going to get noticed.
That makes sense because you're looking for somebody who is investing in themselves through their education, investing in basically learning more about this specific industry through the organizations that they're going to join. So that makes perfect sense. So Linda Sumberland from Illinois. Linda, you asked the same question about 30 other people asked, so I'll just use your question. How much money do you expect an agent to invest in an REO asset over and above the standard marketing, signage, costs, et cetera? Is there any incurred expenses that an agent listing properties for Excellen will incur?
That is a very good question, and it's a question that they should be very concerned with. Now, anybody who may be on the call that has worked with me before knows that I believe that real estate agents and brokers ought to do what they are trained to do, and that is list, market, sell, and close real estate. For that reason, our intent is for us to be using national property preservation companies who will secure the properties, trash out the properties, put the utilities on in their name, get bids for us to do any work, help get those bids implemented if we decide to do the work. So in essence, what I'm saying is that my standard REO listing will not require a broker to put out any money on our behalf. Now, when I say that, I have to give the caveat that if we have a special circumstance with a client that will not allow us to use a preservation company, then I may be forced to ask an agent to help with that. But at this time, I don't anticipate it. I know with a number of other companies, you will have to front these expenses. I know real estate brokers right now that have over $500,000 in receivables out for their REO inventory.
Yeah, we've certainly experienced that on a micro level through our agents, and we're dealing a lot with those same brokers that have that same issue. But the nice thing is that most of the big asset management companies, you know, it's interesting, Carrie, I don't know if this has anything to do with it, but it really seems to depend on the region of the country. Like in California, we're seeing that most agents get the properties after they've been reconditioned. But we have agents we have an agent in Minnesota who I think they're going to sell like 300 REOs this year based on what they've already got in inventory. And they still have to do reconditioning on about 50% of them for the same asset management companies that recondition their properties that they have in California. So I guess it all comes back to who the investor is. Is that pretty much how it's working?
Well, it comes back to who the investor is and what the locality is. There is a likelihood that the property preservation company's expenses in Podunk, Minnesota are going to be significantly more than they would be in California simply because the number of vendors that they may have that's available. So it may be a cost reason that they actually come down and say, okay, because if you're dealing with a property that's, let's say, average of $65,000, you're going to be watching your pennies a lot more than if you're doing work to a $650,000 home.
Sure, makes sense. So other than, obviously, the agents that are existing HRCs with Titanium, we talked essentially the traditional path to going about getting assets within REO companies. This is a question that came up a bunch of different ways. So from your experience, what other ways can an agent – what other things can an agent do to secure more REO listings other than going to the website, filling out the application?
Okay. That's a good question. And I also want to point out that right now, Excellen REO is the only servicer in the country that's going to offer the million-dollar guarantee to all of its agents. And you say, well, what is the million-dollar guarantee? We guarantee, Tim, if your agents pay us $1 million, we'll give them any asset they want.
Can I get that in writing?
Absolutely. I will put it in writing.
Julie, that sounds like a guarantee we should adopt.
I know. No kidding. I'm all for that. I might just liberate that.
So in answer to your question, it is very difficult because more and more people are finding that the retail market is very, very tough right now. And so they're trying to get into the REO market. The best advice that I would have for somebody taking off my titanium hat, if you're going to try to get in with other companies that perhaps don't have the same type of vehicle that we do, my best advice would be to partner with someone who is already in the REO business and work with them until you can establish your bona fides, so that when you actually do apply, that you've got something, you've got a story to tell. Because, you know, I'm really impressed that you're the best, you know, realtor in Apple Valley, and you sold more than anybody else in the past 5 years. But if they were all retail properties, if you have not done any REO work, then, you know, the chance of coming on board with me are probably slim and none, and slim is getting on the next bus out of town.
Well, so you're kind of describing, I think, a reoccurring theme that Julie and I deal with every single day, and it's a sense of entitlement that comes a lot from agents who were previously, or maybe still are, top producers, and they think that title will automatically entitle them to the golden ticket to REO assets. And the fact is it's a different world played with different rules. A lot of the same rules apply in all reality. But, you know, you're hearing Carrie, who's taken the time to explain to you, and I have to say, rather surprisingly honest, straightforward terms, what this is all about, how you go about securing the business, what you have to do to keep your assets before they become reassignments. Oh, that was a great question. How long does an agent keep a listing with Excellen before you guys reassign it to another agent?
We have a marketing program. I was just on another call describing our vanilla marketing program to our clients is a 180-day program. And what that entails is that we will work with our listing broker for 90 days. And if the property is not sold at the end of the 90 days, we will ask our listing broker to give us a 30-day quick sale value. And if that 30-day quick sale value is more than 20% difference from the original value, we will have a reconciliation done. And then we will relist with our broker for another 30 days. At the same time, on day 90, we will inform our auction company that if the property is not sold by day 120, that the property will become theirs to auction between day 121 and day 150, so that it's closed in 180 days.
That's an interesting process that not very many other asset management companies are doing, that second phase where you're sending it to an auction company.
Correct. So
that's novel.
If the broker does not have it sold in 120 days, then the broker loses the listing. And Tim, I'll add that, you know, if one of the reasons is because the broker was really off the mark in their BPO, they probably won't get any more assignments.
Going back to the fact that you guys are keeping a constant eye on the various matrices in terms of valuing the agents, and these are the exact same. We didn't talk about cash for keys. Five people asked that question. Cash for keys, is that one of the things you look for when you're trying to grade an agent, as it were?
We have a very aggressive cash for keys program. And if it sounds familiar, just like if the marketing plan sounds familiar, anybody that does work for American Home Mortgage, IndyMac Bank, and Ocwen Financial, it's because I developed these programs there. Our Cash for Keys program is generally higher than most other people are offering, and we also offer a bonus to our agents if they're able to get a cash for keys agreement signed within a specific period of time.
Do you feel comfortable talking about those numbers just for the sake of putting it out there so we don't get that question 1,000 times?
Generally, we will start off offering about 1% of the UPB which is the unpaid principal balance, and go to 2%. And the asset manager, the senior asset manager, will have the ability to go higher than that after they counsel with me, depending on the area. So if you've got a property that's got an unpaid principal balance of $250,000, then you know that you're going to have between $2,500 and $5,000 to work with.
Wow, that is more aggressive. You are absolutely right. That's a lot more aggressive. So,
and that doesn't include the bonus. We generally pay a $500 bonus to the agent if they can get the cash for keys done within 30 days. And we work with our property preservation company so that the property preservation company will meet the agent and the occupant at the house of the day of vacancy. They'll check over the house. They'll take the keys. They'll give the agent his bonus check, and they'll give the occupant their cash for keys check.
That's incredible. So there's a nice little idea for all of you. Julie, go ahead.
Yes, Tim, there's lots of questions saying, are there spots left in the class? It was sold out for about 10 minutes. I just opened up the class, 5 more spots, but you need to sign up today. We also have a new call going on next week, so jump on your spot now before it's sold out again. You can either hit that red button on the webinar or call 866-422-9497. Back to you guys.
A lot of questions, again, from folks that I think logged in early. Carrie, and I'm going to wrap this call up. I really, really appreciate how generous you have been with your time today. Again, agents that are existing HRCs want to know how they go about getting connected with Excellen. And could you please tell them the process, sir?
Once again, if you are an HRC with Titanium Solutions, we will be contacting you. We will be sending you some information about a questionnaire that you'll need to fill out. If you are not interested in REO assignments, you don't have to fill it out. But if you are interested, you fill out the questionnaire. And as I indicated, out of the about 9,000 brokers that we have that are in our HRC group, we'll probably start with an initial 1,500 of our top HRCs with REO experience to make up our REO group for Excellen.
So for those of you who have been following HREU's, Harris Real Estate University's, advice with regards to doing a great job for Titanium, guess what? Your ship has come in. Your goose is finally getting ready to lay its golden egg. So for those of you who have done a great job and done all of your Titanium assignments at the highest level, and I know that is a majority of you, well, you may have, or probably sounds like you do have, first stab at becoming an asset listing agent for Excellen. So I'm very, very excited for all of you. And for those of you who didn't quite get your assignments done on time, I would suggest that you reconnect with Titanium and essentially get back on board with them and do a great job on those Titanium assignments. Carrie, I don't want to keep you any longer. Again, you've been very generous. We have now about 250 questions. I'm certainly not going to interrogate you any further. Anything you'd like to say, anything you'd like to put out there in terms of maybe a question I should have asked or a thought that came to mind where you didn't get an opportunity to express it? Is there anything else that you'd like to pass along to literally the thousands of realtors that are listening to this call now live and in replay? Oh, and by the way, we had two CEOs of large regional brokers who said hello on this call. I don't generally read their names because they don't want me to, but so this is a wide audience. Is there anything you'd like to say?
One thing that we didn't talk about that I look for, and I know that my asset managers will, and that's problem solvers. There's an old a management school where, you know, somebody comes to you with a problem and says, Carrie, you know, what should I do? And if you look at the problem as a monkey, now the problem jumps from your back to my back because you're asking me to solve your problem for you. That's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for agents who are innovative and quick thinking. And some of the best examples of that, right now, May 20th of last year, the Tenant Protection Act went into effect, and it changed the ball game as far as getting occupants out of their property. And it's become very important for us to know who the occupant is that we're dealing with, because it's going to have a bearing on what we can and can't do. So, you know, the average agent we were talking about is going to go out to the property, and even if they're within the first 48 hours, they're going to click a button or send an email and say, yes, the property is occupied. Well, you know, that's part of the equation. Who's it occupied by? You know, very, very important. Said, well, you know, nobody came to the door. That's always the first answer. Well, we knocked on the door, or we left our card. Nobody came to the door. Nobody returned our call. I can tell you that the innovative agents go and knock on neighbors' doors. They tackle the mailman who's coming down the street to find out, well, who is it that lives at this house? You know, have you been dropping off mail there, or have you not been dropping off anything for the last 60 days? Call the utility companies. Call anybody that you can do to find out who it is that either is in the house or you thought was in the house. Figure out how to solve problems. You know, if property has what we call hazard claim damage, don't just tell your asset manager that it looks like the property's been vandalized. You need to go in and say, okay, somebody's come into the property, they've broken in, they've taken X, Y, and Z, and they've done such and such a damage. We have called the local police department. We have filed a police report talking about this vandalism, and the police report number is 123-4567. That is a great agent, because now we have everything we need to call our hazard claims recovery department and have them immediately start working on with our insurance company to get the money back that we'll need to fix the property up. Those are the types of things, the going above and beyond, the using of the imagination, that while they may not get you the initial assignments, I guarantee you they will keep the assignments coming.
Well, it makes sense because, again, getting back to the point you made, Carrie, if you've got an asset manager in your office and they've got 500 assets to manage, that in itself is a lot of work without having to worry about a bunch of agents that they have to really handhold the whole way. You're looking for essentially agents that are going to really be leaders. They're going to essentially treat this like it's their only business. And guys, what he's giving you permission to do is really take ownership of the assets that you get assigned and really, again, treat them as if they were your only business, as if they're your most important client. And let's just be honest, for a lot of you, if you had Excel and assign you 20 assets, knowing that when you do a great job getting those things sold, not only are you going to get paid, obviously, but they're going to hopefully assign you more assets, this is and will be your most important relationship. You heard Carrie say at the top of this call that this isn't just a temporary phase in the housing markets. We're going to be in this cycle for a long time. No one knows for sure, right? But probably for the most part, everybody listening to this call now and in replay, you're going to be in this cycle. You're going to be dealing with the short sales, and you're going to be dealing with all the things we talked about on today's call for the remainder of your real estate career. And as sad as that is, for the sake of the people that are essentially losing their homes and for our economy and your local housing markets and the rest of it, it also is very exciting because you are being put in a position to truly help your community get the assets sold, help the real estate market to turn itself around. And, guys, your work on a micro level is actually doing something to help turn the national economy around. And that gets back to the ethos of HREU, and Carrie and I didn't talk about this on the call, but we talked about it yesterday in our pre-call. You know, this market, this opportunity is truly about being of service and helping others. So, guys, if you have that mindset, being of service in this particular example, to the asset manager, taking the burden and the load off them and doing it yourself, this is your opportunity that some of you have been waiting your entire careers to come. I mean, we're talking about right now an opportunity for you guys to list and sell properties on a regular, repeated, predictable pattern act professional, service the heck out of your asset manager, communicate, do the other things that Carrie suggested, and this can be your market. That's what's so exciting. You know, Carrie, you're dealing, you know, it's kind of interesting. You're dealing with agents, or in your experience, you're dealing with agents that, despite the fact that most markets are essentially, you know, swirling the toilet bowl, you're dealing with agents that are probably having more success and making more money than they ever have before in their career. So that's kind of an interesting dichotomy. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, I would. And the other thing that I'll point out, because I appreciate your saying it, I want to be your most important client, but the best advice I can give you in order to do that is to treat each of my assets as if you own them.
Ah, good.
So if they were your, if it was your property, would you just go and knock on the door and if nobody answered, go away? You know, if you got a call in the middle of the night from the police department that says, you know, we think that your property's been broken into, would you say, well, gee, thanks for the call. I should be by there sometime tomorrow. Or would you get out of bed, get dressed, and go and meet the officer there? Pretend like it's your property and you can't go wrong.
That is a – I'm going to definitely adopt that. I like the way you phrase that because that definitely sets the tone for your expectation. So for those of you who have assets and you want to list more and keep the ones you have, I hope you listen to this call 100 times over. For those of you who are new agents or seasoned agents and you want to list REOs, same homework assignment, re-listen to this call. Keep a recording of this call everywhere with you. We talked about a ton of things, same things that existing Harris Real Estate University students have been hearing over and over again. Carrie added a lot of great detail, which I appreciate. So, Carrie, again, thank you for being our superstar today. Very, very generous. I will invite you back. Hopefully you'll accept my invitation in the future. Thank you very much for your time today. You've been, I mean, honestly, Carrie, it's just really been wonderful having an opportunity to speak with someone at your level and inviting the students to participate and really allowing the students to have direct interaction with you. Hopefully this will create a even longer lasting relationship between Harris Real Estate University students and Titanium. And again, so thank you very, very much for being today's Harris Real Estate University superstar.
It's been my pleasure. I thank you for having me, and I look forward to doing business with all of your students.
Very good. So, guys, on behalf of Julie and myself, okay, Julie, I will mention it. So there's three spots left for those of you who want to become a Harris Real Estate University Agent REO Secret student. Go ahead and hit that red button, and you can roll as a student. And for the rest of you, I've lost track. There was hundreds of you on this call. We are going to be doing another call next Thursday, and during that call on Thursday, Julie and I are going to be interviewing 2 to 3 of our top REO listing agents. So these are agents that have been following the advice of Carrie today and, frankly, are having their best careers ever. So that call is going to be on Thursday of next week. We will invite you to that call. In the meantime, those of you who are enrolled at Harris Real Estate University, make sure you're attending your calls live or your classes live. Make sure you're listening to Daily Motivational Message and visiting the blog on a regular basis. And for those of you who have not yet enrolled at Harris Real Estate University, what the heck are you waiting for? So on behalf of Julie, myself, and all the faculty and staff of Harris Real Estate University, I want to thank you sincerely for joining us for today's superstar interview. Have a wonderful day.
The moderator has left the conference.